Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed. Plus, free premium delivery with any bed and base. Ends Monday. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month, no commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Before the Ring, before the Hobbits, in the first age of Middle-earth, Morgoth, the first Dark Lord, wages open war against elves and men of the West. Among the greatest of mortal warriors stands Hurin Thalion, Lord of Dor Lomond, a man unyielding, proud, and without fear. North of Dor Lomond, in the perilous realm of Angband, dwelt the Dark Lord Morgoth. His rule was growing as his dominion over Middle-earth was increasing. A bloodthirsty tyrant determined to bend the world to his will. And to prevent his destruction, elves and men banded together to march upon the cursed land of Angband and crush Morgoth once and for all. The battle, infamously known as the Battle of Unnumbered Tears, here Hurin, alongside his brother Huor, draw swords together, leading the armies of Dor Lomond. Two brothers crusading side by side against the epitome of evil and chaos. And as the forces of Morgoth overtake them, Huor takes his last stand, losing his life. And as we read in chapter 20 of Tolkien's mythology, The Silmarillion, we read, "Last of all, Hurin stood alone. Then he cast aside his shield and wielded an axe two-handed, and it sung that the axe smoked in the black blood of the troll guard of Gothmog until it withered. And each time that he slew, Hurin cried, 'Aue entu luva, day shall come again.' 70 times he uttered that cry, but they took him at last alive, by the command of Morgoth, for the orcs grappled him with their hands, which clung to him still, though he hewed off their arms. And ever their numbers were renewed, until at last he fell buried beneath them. Then Gothmog bound him and dragged him to Angband with mockery." You see, he fights until the end. He is surrounded, taken alive, and brought before Morgoth himself. There, chained to a stone throne, Hurin refuses to submit, refusing to reveal the hidden city of Gondolin, refusing mercy, refusing fear. Morgoth, enraged, does not kill him. Instead, he curses him, forcing him to watch through dark sorcery the unfolding doom of his bloodline. You see, here, Hurin, a man of honor, fights for his people and for the hope of the world. And when captured, he does not waver. He remains steadfast under torture. These are the type of men we want modeled in stories. Men of honor and courage. Men who do not bow to the enemy. Men who fight for those they love until they have nothing left. Stories do not shape culture accidentally. They shape it because they train the imagination. And when the imagination collapses, so does virtue. We need virtuous characters, so join us in this episode of Middle Earth and Film. And we Christian Americans are the last hope for the West. Storytelling matters in this world.
There's a hunger for good stories.
We're tired of seeing Hollywood filth and slop.
That's what our goals are to make movies that are good, true, and beautiful, and glorify the Lord.
If America loses, that's it for the West. Welcome, everyone, to Middle Earth and Film, Episode 2. I am one of your hosts, Trenton Powell, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tobias Powell. How are you doing, Tobias?
Doing good. That was quite the cold open there. Quite the story.
Oh, yes. Very much.
Yeah.
One of my favorites.
Inspiring. Very, yes. Very great. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Tobias, we are here to continue in this project of analyzing film and paving a way forward as we are seeking to build a film company and impact the film industry for the honor and glory of Christ. Mm-hmm. In this project, we're observing the landscape and planning our crusade to take over the film industry. Mm-hmm. In episode one, we discussed the story in The Lord of the Rings that many aren't familiar with, and that is in The Return of the King and the penultimate chapter where we have the scouring of the Shire. Mm-hmm. We observed where we are as a culture and how that story pertains to entertainment as we're looking at the scouring of the West, as we're looking at the destruction of the entertainment industry, as we're looking at the destruction of stories as we know them and the corruption that we often see. Mm-hmm. And we concluded that we must stand, that we must fight, that we need stories that are true, good, and beautiful, and stories that impact others and impact culture. Mm-hmm. So in this little corner of this grand project, we're endeavoring to do that, to tell, to write, and to film, and to live stories that change the world, because we believe that stories do change the world. Mm-hmm. So as the landscape has been evaluated, everything's on fire.
Yeah.
Everything's burning. And yes. Everything is dying. But what comes after death, Tobias?
Yeah, we get life.
We get life. Mm-hmm. We get resurrection.
Yeah.
So as we see death around us, that's our hope. Mm-hmm. Like, we want to see
something better is coming.
Yes.
And yeah, we can definitely have hope in that for sure.
Yeah. We know, and as we observe the landscape, observe what we're up against, we see that we know the enemy. Mm-hmm. And we know, and we have to figure out how to fight him. Mm-hmm. What weapons do we need in our arsenal? And part of that is is how we tell stories and the characters that we create. And so in the coming months, we're going to evaluate different character virtues and traits for male and female characters. You know, what does it look like for a masculine character to be virtuous? What does it look like for a female character to be virtuous? Mm-hmm. And showing their distinctness. You know, men aren't supposed to act like women, and women aren't supposed to act like men. Mm-hmm. And we see that. We've seen that. We've seen that androgynous, egalitarian flip in culture and in so many movies and films and different forms of media. And so we're asking right now, like, what makes a masculine character? What makes a character masculine? As we're telling masculine, or we're creating masculine characters. Mm-hmm. And the next episode, we are going to look at what we want to see in female characters. Mm-hmm. and their virtues. And yeah. And as we're doing this, and, you know, as we talked about last week, we're diving into Middle Earth, into Tolkien's legendarium. We're looking at the world that he created. Mm-hmm. And we're looking at the characters and the archetypes that he created and using them as archetypes for our characters. Mm-hmm. For the stories that we tell. And so today, looking at seven different virtues that a masculine character should have in a story. And to that, we'll consider a handful of Tolkien's characters to do that. So, Tobias, do you want to list off the first virtue that we are looking at?
Yeah, absolutely. We have courage. Courage is the willingness to do what is right, despite fear, uncertainty, or the near certainty of loss. Yeah, absolutely. We need to see courage in our heroes, especially the men. I mean, I've been reading through a book on Christopher Columbus, and this is all making me think of that, and just seeing his courage and of what he did to do what he did and to set out and into the unknown. And he was one of the most, I mean, masculine men in history. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we see these examples in history, and we also are obviously wanting to model our characters, but also our lives off of them. Mm-hmm.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This is how God tells stories. God told a story through Christopher Columbus, and a story that lives on towards us. And of course, people try to corrupt it and try to shame him and try to degrade his story and consider him just to be a unruly beast. But you know, as we look at his story and his life, we see the his virtues. We see the courage that he has and his willingness to go to the ends of the earth for his people. For the future of mankind, he's sought glory and did it courageously.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and that courage is a virtue that many men lack today because as we're saying with probably all these virtues is because we don't have courageous characters. We don't have courageous stories, stories of men of courage that we can look up to and that we can exemplify and that we can learn from.
Mm-hmm.
One account that I want to give, I'm just going to jump into another story. But what one that we see in Tolkien's story, especially in The Lord of the Rings specifically, is Aragorn. Mm-hmm. Aragorn is a man of courage, and that he is often always doing the right thing, even when it's hard, even when it's difficult. He's willing to do it despite fear, despite the uncertainty, despite sometimes the certainty of loss. Like, he is a man with a backbone, man who of courage, who fights for what is right. And one like small example that I want to share that I actually read in the Two Towers this past week, as I was reading through it, I was reading through the Battle of Helm's Deep, which is just lit a fire under me. I just love that story. You know, of course I love it in the films as well, in the Two Towers film, mm-hmm. and watching it unfold and this. The cinematic experience that is, but reading it as well just slights a fire under me. But towards the end of the Battle of Helm's Deep, when the armies of Isengard are overtaking the great fortress of Hornburg, when there was great reason to despair and the battle was almost over, it was nearing its end and it seemed that they had lost, we have this account of Aragorn where he stands above the great gates overlooking the Uruk-hai army. And heedless of the arrows of the enemy that are shooting at him, heedless of those of the arrows of the enemy, he raises his hand in the form of parley. And the enemy mocks him and tells him to bring out the king of the mark, to bring out Theoden. And Aragorn responds by saying, "The king stays or comes at his own will." And then they ask him why it is even that he's standing out above this gate. Was it to see their great army and the coming victory? No, Aragorn says. He says, "I looked out to see the dawn. None knows what the new day shall bring him. Get you gone ere it turn to your evil." Okay, the battle is all but over. He's losing. Mm-hmm. And he says, "No, I've come out here to look at the dawn because there's a new day coming. It's been night. Oh, they've been fighting throughout the night. There's a new day coming. Light's about, the sun's about to rise. You guys best be scared because..." Because this night's not over. There's resurrection after death. Mm-hmm. There's light after darkness. And he says, "No enemy has yet taken the Hornburg. Depart, or not one of you will be spared. Not one will be left alive to take back tidings to the north. You do not know your peril. You do not know your peril." So the great fortress of Helm's Deep is about to be taken, and all hope should be lost, and yet Aragorn has hope. Because he knows Gandalf had promised that he would come. He knows that there's hope out there, that there's hope that Gandalf will return with the armies of the Rohirrim, mm-hmm. with the remaining of the army that was not with them at Helm's Deep. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't know that for sure. But he has courage. In the movies you kind of sense that he does know, like, because Gandalf specifically told him, at dawn, look over the look above the hill. But in the book, he doesn't actually know for sure, but he has hope. Yeah. And then Tolkien writes this. He says, "So great a power and royalty was revealed in Aragorn as he stood there alone above the ruined gates before the host of his enemies, that many of the wild men paused and looked back over their shoulders to the valley. and some looked up doubtfully to the sky, but the orcs laughed with loud voices, and a hail of darts and arrows whistled over the wall as Aragorn leapt down. And so following this, the archway above where Aragorn was standing, it crashed down. So they now have continued their pursuit. Mm-hmm. Okay, as after Aragorn jumps down. And the orcs began pressing forward to take the fortress, but then they hear the sound of many voices in the deep fortress. Okay. And the echoes of the horn blasts of Rohan slowly grow. And the orcs become dismayed as the riders of Rohirrim ride out, crying, "Helm, Helm, Helm is arisen, and come back for war. Helm for Theoden king." And then Theoden and Aragorn and all the men that remained stormed the orcs and took their final stand. As they rode out, the day finally dawns. They kept commenting how the night was enduring for so long. Mm-hmm. This seems to be the longest night we've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. And they ride out, and then the day finally comes. All hope was lost, but they fought, and they fought even if it meant death. Mm-hmm. And this is where Aragorn in the movies tells Theoden, "Will you ride with me? Ride with me."
Yeah.
And Theoden in the movies, he had despaired. He thought that all was lost. But Aragorn courageously calls for Theoden to ride out, to which in the movies Theoden responds, "For death and glory."
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He held on to hope and fought for death and glory. They rode out together, knowing that it could have been their last ride. That it could have been the last time that they would ride out. Mm-hmm. But they had hoped that the new day was coming. And of course, Gandalf arrives, and in the books, he arrives with Erkenbrand, who's one of the riders of the Mark. It wasn't Éomer, because Éomer was already at Helm's Deep the whole battle. Mm-hmm. Peter Jackson moved that around. But and of course, they finish off the army, you know, resulting in their victory over the great forces of Isengard. Hmm. And so, anyways, this, I just love this account and the story that we see in Two Towers is like all hope is lost, but yet the dawn is coming. Mm-hmm. And Aragorn, in his courage, he's just standing up, pretty much mocking the orcs as they're, you know, about to take the fortress. Like, yeah. The fortress is about to fall down.
Yeah.
And he's standing up there. He's like, you guys best be afraid.
Yeah.
You guys best run because your doom is near.
Yeah.
So, Vi, do you have any other thoughts from this?
Yeah. Such a great example of courage. I actually just watched Two Towers last night. So great timing. Even in the movie, it's so great and inspiring. And I mean, the whole thing, even with where Aragorn throws Gimli and all that, and the courage there, and just the whole scene, like Aragorn's just moment after moment, just showing his courage, and it's just very inspiring. And then in that last moment when they think they're gonna die, and in the movie, like I think it wasn't extremely clear, because he does like look up to the light and he remembers what he had said, and so I think there was still like he didn't know for sure, but mm-hmm. Because they did ride out like thinking like this could be the end, this could be our death,
for death and glory.
And so, yeah, I mean.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and get your first month free. Just $1 down, $15 a month. No commitment. Deal ends Friday, February 13th. You coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Just a great example of courage, and yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, unwavering in the midst of almost certain loss and death.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, just how few men they had and going against the biggest army ever, and they never lost hope, and even just the exchange between Aragorn and Legolas and what they were discussing, and Legolas lost hope for a moment and then goes back to Aragorn and apologizes, and
that I will die as one of them.
Yeah. And yeah, so it's just, yeah, such a great scene.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. And you know, they didn't, just one last remark, like they didn't cower into the mountains with the women and children. they didn't, that's right. Part of courage. Like you're not a coward.
Yeah.
You know, you're brave. You're courageous. You're doing what is right, even when all is lost.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And so another character that we have, which is, you know, going back to the cold open with Hurin, you mm-hmm. know, Hurin is one of my favorite characters in all of Middle Earth. And just seeing his story unfold and seeing all, you know, of course, read the Silmarillion, read, I think it's chapter 20 of the Silmarillion, and then read the Children of Hurin as well, which is, you know, expansion of that story. But you have Hurin, who is going up against the great armies of Morgoth, and you know, fighting for the last hope of mm-hmm. of Middle Earth, and you know, not going to really rehash it all, and you know, just, we don't, you know, not to take too much time on it, but you know, you see a man who was had unwavering courage as the leader of his people. And he was a man that was man that other people wanted to follow, mm-hmm. and he was also strategic, and in battle he was which are going to be our next virtue. He was wise. He was a man mm-hmm. of wisdom. And one quick comment on him is that he was probably the ultimate short king. It's yeah. said in the Silmarillion that though being the eldest, he was shorter in stature than the rest of his kin, which I can resonate with, as I'm the shortest of the Palabros, but yeah. the eldest. He was the ultimate short king, but he was a valiant warrior. You know, he's literally picking up an orc axe and chopping off the heads of orcs as blood spilling everywhere.
Yeah,
like, come on, that's brutal. You know, yeah. like he took his last stand. His brother died beside him as they were mm-hmm. fighting, and he picked up and he took his last stand and should have died, but Morgoth kept him alive and so forth. But
yeah.
Anyway, you see him in his courage. So moving on to the next virtue, that being wisdom. We define wisdom as the ability to discern not only what can be done, but what should be done, even when the cost is great. Mm-hmm. You know, wisdom isn't just how much knowledge you have. There could be a lot of knowledgeable people that are foolish, mm-hmm. that are not wise. It's gaining knowledge, but what you do with that mm-hmm. knowledge,
yeah.
and how you Absolutely. Apply that knowledge
yeah.
in your life. And so this is kind of the obvious one. Which character best exemplifies the wise character in Middle Earth?
Yeah, it'd be Gandalf.
Definitely Gandalf. Yeah, he's the wise, he's the mentor figure that we often see in stories. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's just a lot of things to learn from his character. He's, you know, he comes into the story with Bilbo, and you know, telling him mm-hmm. to go on an adventure and everything, and bringing the dwarves in and all that. But with Frodo, you know, he is the one that, you know, comes and meets Frodo. And, you know, he learns, you know, Frodo of course receives the ring from Bilbo, and you know, Gandalf goes and gains knowledge, you know, in the halls mm-hmm. of Gondor. About the ring, and then comes back with that knowledge to best make the decision how mm-hmm. to rightly go forward, and that yeah. leads to the, you know, the story of the Fellowship of the Ring and so forth. But he's a character that is he's a mentor. And one thing about the mentor in most stories is that they don't have much of a character arc. Mm-hmm. Because they've already lived, they've lived their story. Mm-hmm. They've lived the story that the hero is trying to live mm-hmm. and going to yeah. live, and they've gone on those journeys.
Right. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. They've gone through a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, they've lived experience.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, and you see again and again in the stories, Gandalf always. Taking in analysis of the situations and just, you know, the even where the characters are and just what's best for them in their road and how much he should be present. I mean, even in The Hobbit, he's, you know, he's leaving at times and allowing the characters to do the growth that they need to. And So we see again and again wisdom coming from his actions, and he's always helping the characters go on the paths that they need to through his wisdom.
And there's this really unique relationship that wisdom has with death, and this is one thing that I don't remember exactly who said it, but it's, you cannot get wisdom without death. You cannot get wisdom without dying in some way. There has to be a death in order to receive wisdom. What I mean by that is, you know, even look at Christ. Christ is the embodiment of wisdom. He is the wise man that we read in Psalm 1, that we read throughout the Proverbs 1 and Psalm 1, all throughout the book of Proverbs. He is the embodiment of wisdom. And how do you get to Christ? Well, you have to die. You have to go through the grave. Christ, who is on the other side of the grave, he's resurrected. How do we get there? Well, we have to go and die. Mm-hmm. We have to take up our cross. We have to go into the grave and to come out. And so in order to gain wisdom, you got to die. But we also see that often in stories where the mentor character, what always happens to the mentor character?
They die.
Yeah. They meet an end.
Yeah.
And this is always a turning point for the protagonist. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
It's a moment where they learn wisdom. They learn a lesson. They make a change, and they have to make a choice. Mm-hmm. And it has to be a wise choice. But in life, what always comes after death?
Life.
I literally noticed this week. The mentor character, they always die, but they always seem to live on somehow. Gandalf, mm-hmm. of course, he comes back as mm-hmm. Gandalf the White.
Yeah.
You know, a wiser man who's gone through death.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And, you know, it has greater wisdom and greater knowledge and uses that and applies that in various ways. Mm-hmm. And he's a continued mentor to the rest of the characters as one who's gone through death. Mm-hmm. Think of Obi-Wan Kenobi. Mm-hmm. What happens to Obi-Wan in New Hope? He dies, yeah. Sacrifices himself, yeah. you know, and causes a distraction for Darth Vader and the rest of the stormtroopers so that mm-hmm. Luke and Han and Leia can get in the Millennium Falcon and take off.
Yeah.
You know, after, of course, he turns off the shields and he does all that. Everything he does helps our heroes, mm-hmm. even though he pretty much knew he wasn't coming out of there alive. So he goes into the Death Star and dies. But what do we see later on in the story? When Luke is at the his final moments of the battle of you know, destroying the Death Star, you know, like as he's in the trench, what happens?
Yeah, he has a resurrection sort
yeah,
of.
He does. Yeah. Yeah. He hears Obi-Wan saying, you know, use the Force, Luke. You know, and you know, no, don't use the. Mm-hmm. The cheater thing,
yeah.
for the trench run, you know.
Yeah.
He says, no, don't. So like he lives on, mm-hmm. you know, through the Force. You know, that's kind of a cheat code. You know, mm-hmm. he's using the Force to live on to continue to give him that wisdom. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes, what we see is, you know, in non fantastical stories, the mentor lives on through memory, you know, where the character remembers a lesson that was taught, and so that continues to be lived on.
Right.
Think of Uncle Ben,
yeah,
and Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Uncle Ben dies, and what does Spider? Of course, that change that in his death changes Peter Parker's character and propels mm-hmm. him and learns to take responsibility. You know, with great power comes great responsibility, so he learns mm-hmm. to be the hero. But that lives Uncle Ben's lesson lives on throughout his life. Mm-hmm. What he taught him. So even though Ben died, he lives on mm-hmm. through memory and through the lesson that he taught Peter.
Yeah. You can even go to the Dark Knight trilogy with Ra's al Ghul.
Oh, yeah.
He even comes in later films. I mean, I don't know if he talks about him in the third movie, but I know in the Dark Knight,
he
mentions him. And
it's been a while since I've seen it, but he is in the third. I remember yeah. Liam Neeson's in there. As like a memory or something, but
yeah, vision. But like even the lessons he learned from him and stuff, and even talking about him essentially like literally living on, and but yeah, I mean you see that there too,
yeah, 100%, and Yeah, and there are a number of characters, you know, but that mentor character, there's always a death and resurrection. Mm-hmm. So it's just interesting that the wise character dies and then lives on somehow.
Yeah.
And it's that wisdom coming with death. Like you need death in order to get wisdom. Mm-hmm. And the hero often is during the dark night of the soul. Mm-hmm. It's that all is lost moment. Both those moments where mm-hmm. the character remembers the lesson, or the mentor lives on somehow, mm-hmm. so that our character can overcome death, can overcome being, you know, getting afflicted by the serpent and overcoming that to be the hero, to do the right thing, to overcome the villain, to crush the head of the serpent, mm-hmm. and so forth. So death, resurrection, we see that wisdom characters. Our third virtue is self-mastery. This one's pretty straightforward, but self-mastery is the rule over one's desires and impulses so that power, strength, and skill serve the good rather than the self. It's that mastery over your lusts and over your desires, where it's like your desire for comfort or your desire for ease, your desire for things to go your way is crushed in order for the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We see this with many characters. I think Tom Bombadil is one that came to mind as far as his, you know, he was not tempted by the ring. Mm-hmm. You know, he shows self-mastery. Self-mastery is a virtue he already has. Mm-hmm. Like it's not one that's learned for him, mm-hmm. at least in the story. He already has it. He's not tempted by the ring. He kind of laughs at it, mm-hmm. you know, and, yeah. And then we have Hurin. He doesn't give in to Morgoth's demands. You know, so this is like often in stories, characters that go through torture and torment, mm-hmm. and that don't break under pressure.
Yeah,
you know, because they've mastered their desires to that point where they're ready to endure, you know, the torture and the suffering.
Well, you see this in many, many. I mean, it's essentially the. When you have a story, you have your dark night of the soul. It's when the hero overcomes that and gets that self-mastery. You know, all is lost. The character is just completely beaten, doesn't know how he's going to get through this, if he's going to get through this. But then, you know, there's... and thinks he's gonna end or whatever the case may be, and then he has that moment of realization and self-mastery and will usually overcome whatever that thing may be. And but yeah, I mean that's essentially the moment of overcoming the dark night of the soul is where that hero gains that that virtue.
Mm-hmm. 100%. That's such a crucial point of the story. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's where that's kind of going back to the wisdom, is where they learn the lesson that mm-hmm. they need to learn, and they do the right thing, showing that they have that self-control and then self-mastery over their desires.
Yeah.
Aragorn is a great example of this. You know, he's not ruled by a lust for power or wealth, but he knows who he is. He knows that he is Isildur's heir, but he's not constantly being ruled by that. He's patient. He's waiting. You know, because he's mastered those desires in his character. Now, okay, you know, we're of course like. The movies give him more of an arc than he gets in the book, because the book is mostly just him waiting. He already has Anduril. He already has the sword. The sword that was broken has already been forged in Fellowship of the Ring early on in the story. You know, of course, mm-hmm. they don't do that in the movie. That's for another day. He already has the sword. He already he knows that he is next in line for the throne, and he knows he's Isildur's heir. He knows what is ahead. But he's not being ruled by that. He decides to go off on you know, adventure, a crucial adventure, with, you know, some hobbits, a dwarf, an elf, and a wizard. Like he's going to go on this journey. You know, you meet him as a ranger who, you know, he's, you know, kind of an outcast in society. You know, he's low. even though he should be high mm-hmm. as the future king of Gondor. You know, he's low, you know, so of course, you know, other virtues in there as well, but primarily looking at one who's self-mastered. Mm-hmm. You know, he's waiting, he's patient, and he does what is right, not being ruled by lust for power or anything. Yeah,
absolutely.
Fourth, we have perseverance or steadfastness. Perseverance is the quiet refusal to abandon one's duty or hope when faced with an unbearable trial. It's that refusal to, you know, to abandon what you're called to do, and mm-hmm. when you're pushed up against the wall. This one's also not kind of straightforward. You know, Tobias, what characters do we see that show perseverance?
Yeah, well, definitely Frodo. Mm-hmm. We see it all throughout the story. He's faced with tons and tons of hard times and trials, but yeah, he never gives up, and he's always pushing forward. I mean, you have as well. At times, he does struggle, but then you have like Sam that'll come alongside him and help him go forward.
There's things worth fighting for, Master Frodo. Yeah, Frodo, like, I mean, getting stabbed, you know, seems like multiple times. Well, he got stabbed multiple times. The blade of the Ringwraiths and the troll, and, you know, then he got stung by Shelob, and yeah, he went through it all. And then, of course, carrying the great burden of the ring.
Yep.
So he's like the perfect epitome of perseverance and steadfastness. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, and then of course he falters in the end by not casting the ring into the fires. But of course, you know, there's a lot of things there, a lot of lessons to be learned as far as why that was, why Tolkien wrote it that way, why it's Sméagol that actually is the one that, you know, falls into the depths with the mm-hmm. ring, and, you know, not Frodo. And, you know, but there's still it's that continued theme of victory comes in unlikely places. Mm-hmm. I know, but Frodo is faithful and perseveres and is steadfast in the midst of so much pain and suffering and hardship, leaving his comfortable home to go to the ends of the world mm-hmm. to save the world.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
We need more characters like that.
Yeah.
When's the last Frodo like character that we've gotten in a movie? You know. It's like, yeah. That's endured so much and that is steadfast and it doesn't sit there and whine and complain about all his emotions and feelings and,
yeah,
you know, asking everyone to empathize with him and
gosh. Yeah.
I don't know.
No, yeah. Even like as I was watching Two Towers yesterday and just seeing all that they went through and their endurance was just incredible. And then you get into the Return of the King where, I mean, even Sam's endurance can be applauded because, I mean, when, with the whole, I just watched Return of the King too, with the whole, I watched that like last week.
Oh, okay.
I've been watching the movies way out of order. I think I watched Fellowship. Return of the King, and then Two Towers.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice. Awesome. and then I'll be watching Return of the King again sometime.
Yeah. I'm finishing reading the books. I'm halfway through Two Towers, and I try to read them every year. I read Fellowship towards the end of last year. Reading mm-hmm. Two Towers now, and I'm going to read Return of the King, and then I'm going to hopefully get to the movies. I mean, we watched Fellowship of the Ring. We're in the middle of reviewing it, of course.
Yeah.
Hopefully I'm going to finish the book before I watch Two Towers. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's just great to see.
Yeah, and seeing how with Frodo having Sam turn around and Sméagol manipulating Frodo and seeing all that, and then Sam still enduring and saving Frodo and just all that. But yeah.
Yeah. Which I think is a great transition to the next one, which is loyalty and honor. Kind of putting these together. Mm-hmm. But honor is the commitment to act truthfully and rightly in accordance with one's word, role, and responsibility, even when no reward is offered and the cost is personal. You know, so loyalty to your duty, loyalty to your people, loyalty to what you're called to do is closely entwined with honor and doing the right thing, not for reward. So you're loyal not because you gain something for being loyal to this person, or being loyal to your people. It's also the kind of self-sacrifice that you see. But Sam, he is the most loyal character in, I think, in Tolkien's legendary, and all of his writings. He's a loyal companion to Frodo.
Yeah,
you know, he's a brother to him. He goes to the ends of the world with him.
Absolutely.
You know, and even as he, you know, joins the story from the beginning, you know, if Frodo's going somewhere, I'm coming. You know, doesn't even question it.
Yeah, and I liked the scene in Two Towers where who was it? I think it was Aragorn that told Gandalf that Sam went with Frodo, and he just said, "That's good."
Good Sam.
And their companionship is just great, and Sam just never giving up on Frodo and always fighting for him, protecting him. Smeagol's always like, he's always watching.
And I think another character that doesn't get enough credit, and this might be mostly because of the movies, but is Boromir. He is one who shows loyalty and honor in a lot of ways. He does fall. He does have a moment where he gives in to that his lust. He's not self-mastered in a specific way. But I don't think he gets enough credit though. He traveled farther than anyone, for the Fellowship, coming all the way from Gondor to Rivendell to hear about this weapon, to hear about to come and debate and decide what they're going to do with the ring. He went for the sole purpose of saving his people. You know, he was a loyal man. You know, he didn't understand the power that the ring had, and that comes with the ring.
Right.
He didn't fully grasp it. He just thought it is a weapon that can be used against the enemy to defeat the enemy and save his people. So of course he travels across the entire world in order to find out about this ring and potentially bring it home.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't any reward in it for him going on the Fellowship. You know, the reward would have been, you know, to save his people, but it wasn't personal reward, but he even deciding to go with the Fellowship, knowing that the task is to destroy the ring, he still goes.
Yeah.
You know, and when many others wouldn't go, he went.
Great character. And then even into his end, he was loyal to the hobbits and protecting of them, and probably had the most honorable death out of any of them.
Yeah. Of course, how the movie depicts it is incredible. In the book, it's just as great. Just him fighting for Merry and Pippin.
Yeah. You
know, he had no reason to. Yeah. He had no connection to them. They're hobbits.
Yeah.
He's a man. There was no loyalty to them. But he was part of the Fellowship, and these lowly creatures needed his help, and so he fought to the death for them, so that they would be saved, and so that he could protect them, getting an arrow through the chest, and go back to Perseverance. Yes, he struggled with self-mastery in that he did fall into temptation and try to take the ring from Frodo, but even then he repents of that, And like I said, he doesn't get enough credit. He takes an arrow and then keeps fighting, takes another arrow, keeps fighting, takes another arrow. You know, he does not stop until his last breath. And even, you know, his last breath is actually with Aragorn. And you have that, you know, of course, the scene in the movie where Aragorn says to him, "You fought bravely. You kept your honor." You didn't say you messed up. Like, he was, he despaired because he tried to take the ring from Frodo. And he there was that guilt. But you have the line where he says, the hope of man is lost. Because he saw where how easily man could fall and be corrupted by the ring.
Yeah.
So he's like, he despaired. And then of course you have the line where Aragorn's like, I don't know what blood runs through my veins. Which I don't like that line in the movie. But that's okay. But he knows that there is hope. Mm-hmm. Aragorn says, and then he says, "You kept your you persevered to the end. You fought bravely. You kept your honor."
Mm-hmm.
He had an honorable death. He was a man of honor, and he fought for his people. And then Aragorn makes that promise that he will save his people, their people. Like he will take the throne. I can't remember the exact line, but he will save Gondor, essentially promising that to Boromir.
Yeah.
And just,
it's great.
I love Boromir.
Yeah.
We can kind of move on. You have Aragorn, of course, loyal as well. Loyal to who he is, waiting. He's patient, but he's loyal. To take the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Next one, duty. A duty is faithfulness to what is required, regardless of recognition, reward, or outcome. It's faithfulness to that which is required of you. I think this is relatively straightforward. One character I want to focus on, and another character that I love that I think is underappreciated, especially in the films. They utilize him well in the films, I think. But as far as people don't ever bring up his name, and that's Éomer. Mm-hmm. Right? Éomer, he is the he's the nephew of Théoden. Mm-hmm. He Théoden's son dies in the Two Towers, kind of off screen, off book, off a different story. He dies. Éomer is actually, if I've got this correctly, he is the next in line for the throne. But he's not one, and he has so many other virtues. I could have put him in any of these categories. Mm-hmm. He's steadfast. He's faithful. He's not lusting after power. He is self-mastery, because you don't ever see him just like wanting to take the throne. He's not just like, even when Theoden's under the dark spell of Wormtongue, he doesn't try to take the throne from Théoden.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
He's faithful to his people because he loves his people.
Yeah.
He loves the Rohirrim. He loves Rohan, and he fights for them. He's off doing, crusades for Rohan, trying to bring down Saruman and his forces.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a man of duty. He knows what is required of him. He knows his place, and he knows what's required of him, and he fights accordingly.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you have much when you think of Éomer, like when you see him in the movies, read him in the books, like anything you can think of about him specifically as it relates to duty?
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think he's like he takes it very seriously. He's always he takes his role very seriously, and I mean, even when he gets banished, he follows that. Like he knows his role. He even kind of falls under honor of, mm-hmm. he respects his place in the world, and he has a duty to follow his leaders, and even when he gets banished, he ends up, killing a bunch of orcs and that they run into, and
continues to be faithful.
He continues to be faithful to his duty even then, and that leads him once the spell or curse on Théoden is released by Gandalf, like he gets to come back and be the man that he's called to be. Mm.
100%. You even have a moment in this isn't brought, I don't think this is brought up in the movie, I can't remember, but In the book, where he does, and it's really brief, it's actually pretty briefly, it's not really discussed either in the book, but it's referenced, where he does defy the order of Théoden when he's under the spell, because Théoden gives a command, tells him to go do something. I can't remember exactly what it was, and it was either unjust or something that Éomer knows that Théoden would not have actually told him to do.
Right.
But he was under the dark spell of Sauron. He hated Wormtongue, Éomer. He saw through his lies. He saw that he was corrupt. He saw what he was doing to Théoden, and then as a result of that, Théoden banishes him from Rohan, and so he's off. You know, still fighting and still doing his duty, you know, against the command of his king, but it's against the tyranny of his king. You know, he's defying the tyrant that Théoden became because of Saruman's spell.
Yeah.
So anyways, I love Éomer. He's a great character. And then of course he eventually becomes king of Rohan after Théoden's death.
Yep.
And he's a dutiful man. Mm-hmm. He's faithful to what he's called to do. Moving along, final virtue. These two kind of go together, but humility and sacrifice. I think we can kind of summarize that all under humility. But humility is the strength to know one's place, limits, and purpose, and to refuse power or glory that would corrupt them, putting the needs of others before yourself.
Mm-hmm.
By what characters do we see show humility? A lot of these are ones we've talked about. Two we've not really talked about, actually. But
yeah, I mean, Sam is constantly doing this, especially for Frodo. Like I had said earlier, like he's always looking out for him and doing what he can for him, and I mean, he's literally sacrificed his whole well-being and life to go on this journey with Frodo and to make sure that he can protect him and keep him safe to the best of his ability. Yeah, I think Sam is definitely a good example of that for sure.
So, yeah, Frodo, even his willingness to take the ring to Mordor.
Yeah.
There was he didn't have to. I love that. He goes to Rivendell with the thought of that being the end of his quest. Mm-hmm. He took the ring to Rivendell. That's what he was called to do. That was his duty. That's what he was supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't have to stand up and say, I will take the ring.
Mm-hmm.
But in a sense, he knew he had to, and he knew he was the person for the job. He was called to that task. So he humbly laid himself aside and decided to take the ring, to make that sacrifice.
Yeah.
He knows his place, and he doesn't take the easy way out. He doesn't take the path of comfort and ease. You know, he's like, I'm going to do it. Mm-hmm. Even though I may die, I may never return. I may never see the green pastures of the Shire again, but I'm going.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Théoden, of course. Mm-hmm. You just watched Return of the King. You have Théoden's death and his sacrifice. What ways do we see humility coming from Théoden?
Yeah, I mean, another great character, another great ending to a character. The whole battle, his whole speech before they started that battle was just amazing.
Death.
Yeah, just full king mode. So much building up to that moment, and just seeing it in full fruition was just awesome. And then throughout the whole battle, just constantly fighting well, just dying for his people, and it was just awesome, because he was never a king to stay behind and just let them go ahead or whatever. Like, he was always at the forefront of the battles and fighting alongside his men. And
even in the Battle of Helm's Deep, the scene I recalled with Aragorn and Théoden, There's a couple lines in there in the book where Theoden basically says, I need to lead my men in this mm-hmm. moment. I am called to this. I'm going to do this. I'm going to go ahead of them, knowing that like this should be his last stand for death yeah. and glory. This mm-hmm. is it. Yep. Helm's Deep has been taken. Mm-hmm. I'm gonna fight to my last breath.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, he is, you know, they are able to be victorious, in that fight, but he, you know, continues that throughout his story, and, you know, in the final fight, you know, at the end of Return of the King, he, you know, gives his life for his people, mm-hmm. making that sacrifice.
Yep.
For greater good.
Absolutely.
Another character not very well known by most people, one of my favorites of all the elves, one of the Eldar, Finrod Felagund, one of the greatest of all the elves, known as a friend of men, which was uncommon for elves. As we know, he was the king of Nargothrong. He was the first Eldar to discover men, to find men in Middle Earth, after their awakening. So after men, you know, man was created, essentially. Mm-hmm. Instead of ruling them, he instead taught them languages, lore, and music, and learned from them in return. Among these men was Barahir, whose loyalty would later shape Finrod's fate. But Beren, the story of Beren and Lúthien, mm-hmm. a well-known story. He's his son. During the Battle of Sudden Flame, Finrod was saved by Barahir at great personal risk, and you know, so Finrod, an elf, was saved by a man, and in gratitude, Finrod swore an oath of friendship to Barahir and his house, giving him a ring as a token of that bond. Mm. Okay, and he would eventually lay down his life fighting against the forces of Sauron, not simply dying for glory, but dying out of a promise kept to Barahir by protecting Beren, who was merely a man. So Beren was going about to die, and Finrod stepped in the way and died in his place. You know, an elf laying down his life for a man, which is something you wouldn't have seen. Mm-hmm. You don't see in Middle Earth,
right?
Especially in the first age, or yeah. even second age, but. But Finrod, you know, laying down his life for out of a promise kept. He wasn't dying for glory like I would say Theoden. But he was, you know, Theoden. You know, there's still humility. He was dying for others, of course. But it wasn't dying in glory. It was dying out of a promise kept to a man who saved him, who died for him. So he gave up his crown out of a sense of duty and loyalty to his people, out of humility. Mm-hmm. Love Finrod. But one last character that we'll kind of close out with in this story that we've not talked about, and we intentionally did not talk about him, is mm-hmm. Faramir. Mm-hmm. Faramir is, I have a lot of favorite characters in Middle Earth. He is probably my favorite, and for so many reasons. He exemplifies almost all these virtues in different ways. And he, you know, just go down the list. You know, he gives the clearest portrait of rightly ordered masculinity. He mm-hmm. is a masculine archetype in so many ways. And mm-hmm. Tolkien, I think, intentionally wrote him that way. Not that he's a flawless character. That he does have flaws, but very few flaws. And mm-hmm. that's okay. And like, you know, we want to make movies, you know, and you need characters with flaws that they need to overcome. Right? Mm-hmm. And even with Peter Jackson, he took a lot of liberties with a lot of characters and gave them flaws that they didn't have in the books mm-hmm. because it fits more in film. Okay, mm-hmm. you know, whether or not that's the right idea, right choice, we can, you know, debate that all we want. But Tolkien, you know, he did write some characters that seemed, you know, to lack flaws but had struggles. There's mm-hmm. still struggles they need to overcome. Faramir had a lot of struggles still overcome, especially his relationship with his father, with him leading his men and dealing with the Easterlings and dealing with you know, the rising forces of Mordor, him almost losing his life and all that. Like, he struggled, but he shows so many of these virtues. He's not ruled by lust and appetite. He's not ruled by a lust for power. He's not trying to grab the throne unnecessarily. You know, contrast him with Boromir. You know, he's not he doesn't have that temptation to rule by power or lust. He actually in the movies you have a brief moment where he seems to be tempted by the ring when Frodo has the ring when they meet. But the book, that's not, he tells Frodo, I would not take that thing. Even if it lay by the highway, that ring, that power, he doesn't actually have full knowledge of what the ring is at the moment, but he says, I would not even take that, even if it was laying by the road, because he knows that it's not for him. Mm-hmm. He doesn't need that power. He's not trying to grab that power that seems to have corrupted so many men. In the movie it's a little different, but for the most part you get that sense, because you contrast him with Boromir, who did try to grab that power. He did lust after it.
Yeah.
And of course repented, but Faramir, he's not even tempted by it necessarily. And Faramir, he is also courageous. He's loyal. He's steadfast under trial. He's humble. He's an humble soldier of Gondor. And he fights because it's his duty to do so as a steward of Gondor. And like I said, his self-mastery is evident, and you know, he doesn't lust after the ring. His rejection is not, it's not out of naivety, but out of discipline of appetite.
Mm-hmm.
And he's disciplined himself, as we see often. You know, as we read in the book, he doesn't love the sword for its sharpness. He doesn't love the warrior for his glory, or love victory if it requires domination. Mm-hmm. He loves only that which must be defended. He loves his people.
Yeah.
He loves his men. And then of course he wins the girl. He showed love towards Eowyn. Mm-hmm. He wins her over and is a faithful husband to her.
Yeah.
He shows he doesn't need to flirt with evil, like I'd say Boromir somewhat does, in order to be virtuous. He's mastered his appetites and desires. He's steadfast under trial and doesn't waver. He's determined to fight for his country and lead his men.
Yep.
Because that's his duty. That's what he's called to.
Yeah.
So, anything else you want to say about Faramir?
Yeah, I mean, I think you've touched on most of them, but I mean, yeah, he's got insane loyalty to his people. Even loyalty to his father and listening to him in Return of the King and going out to die, and the courage there. You touched on self-mastery, loyalty, perseverance, steadfastness. Like, he's constantly like being pushed aside and humiliated and all these things, and still a lot of these things happen even before seeing the ring, and still having that self-mastery even to that point, and not having just given up on life because of the way his life had been with his father and brother, and following his duties for his country and for his people, his willingness to sacrifice himself in that moment in Return of the King too, because he knew he was going to die, which I mean, in a way he did, but it was kind of a death and resurrection a little bit there.
Yeah,
very great character.
So, and he eventually becomes the steward of Gondor, you know, taking his father's place, but doing so not as a tyrant, but like his father, but as a, well, specifically as a healer. He kind of takes that role of like, you know, caring for others, and as well as that self-sacrifice and that humility, and after having been healed himself from his wounds. And
yeah,
and then, you know, and even we'll talk about Eowyn next time. She's such an interesting character. We'll contrast her from the books and the movies, but she becomes a loyal wife, mm-hmm. faithful wife. She, you know, even after her lust for almost glory, or like, you know, stepping into that role of being almost like a man, you know, and literally in the movies, you know, she says, "I am no man," and, you know, and takes mm-hmm. off her helmet and so forth. She has that girl boss moment. We'll say, yeah. You know, the problems with it, you know, I think it's better handled in the books. But put that aside, Faramir almost tames her. You know, he's a good steward, not only of Gondor, but of his wife. Mm-hmm. And she becomes a faithful, lovely, glorious woman, mm-hmm. That's faithful to her husband as a wife. And they have, you know, and they create a glorious home and mm-hmm. so forth. So
yeah,
you see that. And that's because of Faramir. I mean, Faramir had a big impact in yeah. that, and his character and his virtues.
Yeah.
And winning it went over and so forth.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Those are our seven virtues that we looked at. There's many more we could discuss, different characters we could dive into. You know, I feel like we didn't give the Hobbit very much credit. You know, we got, you know, Thorin, who exemplifies a lot of these virtues, and he has his faults, of course.
Yes, absolutely.
Bilbo and the different dwarves and, mm-hmm. and so forth. So anyways, Tobias, would you want to take us out? You know, this has been Middle Earth and Film, episode 2.
Yep.
As we're looking at the seven virtues of masculine characters, masculine archetypes that we see in Tolkien's world, and characters that we want to use as archetypes for our characters that we write and and stories that we tell, and the lives that we live as men, as husbands, you know, as leaders, you know, as we're seeking to tell these stories and live out these stories. You know, mm-hmm. these are the virtues we want to absolutely. Exemplify in our own lives and live by example. And I hope this has inspired us. Absolutely. I hope it inspires you, mm-hmm. And it encourages you, listener, and to be faithful men.
Yeah,
godly men who exemplify these virtues of self-mastery, of duty, of honor, of faithfulness, of steadfastness, of being men who do not cower in the face of evil, mm-hmm. that are courageous and that are wise and rule justly.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you want to take us out?
Yeah. The stories we choose to tell are never neutral. They shape what we honor, what we fight for, and what we expect from people. Tolkien didn't give us perfect heroes. He gave us ordered ones. Men like Húrin, who would not bend even when hope was lost. Men like Aragorn, who waited until power could be rightly used. Men like Faramir, who refused to lie that victory is worth any cost. Courage, wisdom, self-mastery, loyalty, humility, and sacrifice. These are not traits for fantasy alone. They are virtues for all of life. And when masculine characters lose these virtues in our stories, they soon will be lost on our culture. So we return to the old tales, not to escape the world, but to remember how to live in it, because the night may be long. But as Húrin cried in the shadow of Morgoth, "Aure en Tulu va, day shall come again."
If there's one topic in the American church that needs clarity, it's Christian nationalism.
In 40 years, approximately 40 years, 3% of the American population ultimately was able to be so successful that they were able to replace the American flag with a rainbow.
Instead of the church discipling the culture has been discipling the church.
I think for most of American history, Americans understood their nation to be a Christian nation. That instinct of wanting a people, a Christian people, is good and right. It's worth pursuing.
Almost all of the original colonies, you had to have a public profession of Protestant faith to become any kind of political leader. A great way to love the culture is to make sure that society is ruled by Christian rulers and under a Christian government.
And so if you were a Christian ruler, a king or an emperor or a president or whatever system you're in, and you were a Christian and you have power, you should be, you know, nurturing your people in the same Padilla of the Lord.
We will blaspheme the gods of leftism, globalism, pluralism. Yes, we will blaspheme those gods and we will cut them down.
We are Christians. We are not Marxists and communists, and we're Christian nationalists. And that means that as we seek the earthly and heavenly good of our nation in our social laws and customs and all of the rest, we do so in faith.
The desire of Christ is to make the nations Christian.
Has England lost its way? Sure. Is it redeemable? Absolutely. But like everywhere else and everyone else, the only way to redemption is through Jesus Christ.
Are you aiming to make your household a little, small-scale, miniature model of civilization and harmonious living, where you're creating a beautiful and rich Christian culture in your home, in the earthly and in the heavenly, in the earthly things and in the spiritual things, in the body and in the soul?
Do you believe the United States of America is still a Christian nation?
Absolutely. This is the last stand for Christendom. It really is. People keep talking about the West, but this is not the West. This is Christendom.